sitting in the studio here with the one and only John Tutt from The Princess Cinemas. I'm so happy that you're here. This is great.
I'm so glad I'm finally here.
I know. I've been trying to get you in this studio. I don't know how long I've been trying to get you here. For the longest time now that I think about it. And we're here to talk about Canada Film Days, which is really exciting.
Yes. Our sixth annual Canada Film Days Festival. It's our chance to sort of turn the spotlight up bright on Canadian cinema for a whole week. Not like we don't play Canadian cinema throughout the year regularly with, you know, Cronenberg's Dangerous Method, Café de Flore, and all those other things. But this festival gives us a chance to pull in all sorts of those other smaller titles. And the nice thing about the festival is we try really hard to bring in either actors, subjects in the documentary, or directors, mm-hmm. right? Bringing directors in. And we've got like four directors, a producer, an actor.
I know.
We got Martin Tielli on stage in front of one of the screenings.
And just for you, I brought in like the really, like, because the Real Statics and the Princess go way back. I brought in Melville, which they gave to me years ago when I first met them. So we're going to play something off Melville. But Martin Tielli actually has done the score for Payback, which is the first movie we're going to talk about.
Right.
But before I do that, I'm going to do something technical here because I'm the producer. I'm going to ask you to move back a little bit from the microphone.
Okay.
There we go. That's
good. How's that?
Yeah, I'm gone from just, you know, hosting the show to being the producer and everything else. So I always tell my... I know.
Good.
Okay. This is crazy. So I wanted to talk about Payback, and this is based on Margaret Atwood's book.
Right. Massey Lecture Series. She talks about debt.
So you're going to have
Jennifer Bagewell
in attendance.
Yeah.
And she also did Manufactured Landscapes. This is a really interesting film because it talks about debt. And it's on everybody's mind these days. But this isn't just, oh, my God, how much money do I owe? This is about debt. Sometimes it can't be paid back. It's about sort of ecological debt. It's about, you know, guys in prison. Anyway, I'll let you...
Yeah. I mean, I have only read about Payback. I haven't been lucky enough to see it yet, but it does tackle the other areas in life that debt affects. Other than just being in debt to the bank for $100,000, there's all sorts of other definitions of debt that she tackles in this essay. It was originally a Massey lecture series that she did, and then turned it into a best-selling book. Conrad Black appears in the film.
I know.
So Jennifer Bagewell is quite an accomplished documentary filmmaker, and so she's going to be appearing to introduce the film on...
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, on our opening night.
Yeah.
And also Payback plays for a few nights throughout the festival.
Yep.
On opening night, she will be there with the musician that did the score for the film, Martin Tielli, scored the film. He's going to be playing a saz.
What's a saz?
It looks kind of like a balalaika. It's sort of this... It may be an Asian instrument. I'm not too sure. S-A-Z. Your listeners could Google that and take a look at what he will be playing.
We'll have to look it up for sure. But
so a lot of documentaries. The festival features six documentaries and three feature dramas.
Yeah, that is amazing. The other one is this one. Well, I know someone in town that loves Tom Thompson. And you and I both know him, and that's the one and only wonderful, lovely and wonderful Robert Reed.
He's a fan.
Who writes for the Waterloo Region Record. He has had a fascination, like many other Canadians, with Tom Thompson for the longest time I can remember. And, I mean, the museum had an exhibition of Tom Thompson's work, which was amazing.
Yep. Well attended.
Yeah. Ballet Jorgen also used one of Tom Thompson's paintings in their new Nutcracker, which was called Snow in the Woods, as a backdrop in one of the, I think, the Act Two. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful because Bengt Jorgen from Ballet Jorgen said it's amazing that you get to see the painting in all that beautiful detail in such a larger scale. So many Canadians are fascinated with Tom Thompson because he represents Canada in a visual artist's perspective. And, and the other thing is, he was a fly fisher too, but he died so mysteriously.
Yes.
So who's coming in to talk regarding the West
Wing? So Nancy Lang is a co-producer of West Wind, and she's also the lead researcher in the film. She's coming from Ottawa to present it. She's going to be there just the opening night, just the 8th of May. She'll be there for the 7 o'clock show only. But the fascinating thing about the film, and you're right, people always go on about the death of Tom Thompson, what a mystery it was. And this is more about the arc of his life and his vision and everything. It touches on a little bit of the mystery. But what Nancy's really uncovered is there's an audio tape of a park ranger that actually knew Tom Thompson. So it was recorded. She discovered it was either recorded in the 40s or 50s. And so we get to hear this sort of scratchy audio tape throughout the film. I would say that's kind of the revelation in the documentary.
He has an interesting life. I think he started off at one point in journalism, if I'm not mistaken. But he wasn't one of, or in ads, advertising.
Commercial art.
He wasn't one of the Group of Seven. A lot of people think he was, he's outside of the Group of Seven. But
he's outside of it.
He's associated with it, but he's outside of it. But really interesting guy. And the way he was found is one of Canada's most fascinating and kind of, to some people, romantic. Like, it's a mystery as to how he disappeared and how, I think, wasn't the fishing line wrapped around part of his leg or something like that?
I'm not sure. I think some people say he could have just fallen out of his canoe and knocked his head on maybe had some drinks up at a park lodge, and he was on his way home to where he was staying. I don't really quite know. And it was funny because he wasn't part of the Group of Seven, but a lot of the Group of Seven really turned to him
for inspiration
and stuff. Like, he really was the guy that they really liked his work, and because he would go out. He was very much sort of part of the land. Like a lot of the Group of Seven, they live in Toronto, and then they sort of make these sojourns up north. But Tom Thompson really was of the north.
Like
he stayed, and he was up there, and he fished and did all the things
that a hunter would do, or someone in the wilderness, there's kind of a loneliness to it as well, which
It just resonates. I mean, there's something about the north that just resonates with Canadians in southern Ontario, maybe even across the whole, 49th parallel. But he evokes that in people with his paintings, for sure.
Yeah, he does. So that is Nancy's going to be there May the 8th and 9th. And then we have a couple of other documentaries, too. We've got, this is kind of interesting, 40 Days at Base Camp. About Mount Everest. So this is like
it's a no holds barred look. I'll give you the one line of it. It's a no holds barred look at people romanticize
about
Mount Everest, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's really turned into a real commercial junket for whoever. I mean, whoever. If you and I want to climb Mount Everest, Coral,
we can
go do it. Well, sign us up, we'll do it.
Yeah,
so
but
it's created a weird circus around it. And so Diane Whalen's really turned her camera. I think she was up there for 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
I think she told me the other day when she was in town doing some press, there's 200 bodies somewhere still up on Mount Everest that haven't been retrieved. But as the planet warms, bodies start to all of a sudden, there's a leg, there's an arm. So it's a very strange place, very polluted place. And so she strips back the romanticism of
I'm going to climb Everest. Oh, it's like a lifelong dream.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh.
So she's going to be there for all. In fact, her screening just sort of is closing night of the festival on the 10th of May. And then she carries on for three more nights at the Princess. And she will be there each night to talk and introduce her film. Yeah.
That's what is so cool. This goes back a long way, and I can speak to this because if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have met Adam Egoyan all those years ago when he was just starting out, Bridget Berman. Now we know where Adam Egoyan is or what he's doing now. He's become, one of the most leading directors in Canada and around the world. He chose to stay in Canada rather than, go down to Hollywood.
That's right.
Bridget Berman won an Oscar for Artie Shaw.
Time Is All You've Got. Yeah, yep. That one.
And
one.
She's still yep. going strong. I can't remember the name of her latest film.
Yeah, Bridget Berman is still making, making movies.
She made a documentary about Hugh Hefner.
Yes, that's
right. Playboy documentary.
That's the one she made, yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Cynthia Scott, who did A Company of Strangers.
Okay.
A long time ago.
Yeah, you got to meet Cynthia Scott.
This is a long time ago. So the thing about if you're a real film fanatic like I am and you are, it's so great that you guys are able to bring these directors in so people can meet them. And these days people are so interactive with media that they see the film, but they want to know. To them, the story behind the film is just as fascinating as the film itself.
And it's funny, we were talking about this as well, the demise of video stores and things like that. And I know there's still some independent video stores, highly successful ones. But Netflix, the idea of Netflix, I'm going to get a movie on Netflix. You don't get the extras.
No, I know.
All you do is you get the movie. So this is very interactive. You know, you're going to a theater, you see a big screen, and you get to converse with the director. In a question and answer environment. So it's a bonus to see a film and to have a director there to present it. It's just a wonderful experience. Yeah.
It is very cool. And this is it's a long time concept with a princess. I was just trying to figure out, you guys have been around
since 85.
1985. So that's like 20.
Well, this fall will be 27 years.
27 years, yeah, that's right.
And this is it's a long time,
And still going strong, and your music series is great too. Like I'm a huge fan, and always have been, always will be. I have actually, I've got a Princess Cinema Pass that says expires never. It's so cool.
Right on.
I want to get to. There's one more documentary. And this one is very cool. It's People of a Feather. This is really interesting, too. This was directed by a guy named Joel Heath and written by an Inuit community. Or I guess they helped to tell him about the story of these dying elder ducks.
Yeah. It's funny. Three of our documentaries take place in faraway places. And one one we just mentioned about... Mount Everest. This one takes place on the best. Nunavut. But eider ducks. So they eat their eggs. They use their down feathers for their clothing and things like that. And so this biologist, Joel Heath, has shot this film over 7 years. To depict how close these people are with this duck and how the duck is having trouble, and they discover that it's having trouble because of the huge hydroelectric dams that ring the Quebec shore of Hudson's Bay that are releasing fresh water into a saltwater environment at bad times of the year. But it's not a doom and gloom documentary, but it's sort of about a discovery of this, and it's about how man tries to live with the changing environment. It's very poetic. It's if you're a bird watcher, it's fantastic. The depiction of these diving eider ducks, the underwater footage is great. And this film is a Canadian documentary that's on tour right now across Canada. And we're glad we could get it and fit it right into our festival.
It's also part of the bigger picture too, as you see that like the Arctic is changing, you know, and the. You know, the glaciers, everything's melting, and people are people are needing to pay attention to it. So it's a really interesting way of telling this story too about Hudson Bay, the Inuit, and the dying elder ducks. And the ducks are really cute. They are really cute. I've seen them. They're really cute.
They're beautiful.
We're gonna take a musical break, and we're gonna play. This is like really, really. This is very old, but I don't care. This is Martin Tielli. We were talking about Martin Tielli before because he's done the score for Payback. He's ex of the Real Statics. The Real Statics is one of the first bands to ever come into the Princess Cinema. This is like 6 degrees of...
Oh, yeah. So it's coming all the way back, yeah.
Yep, all the way back. So this is Record Body Count on Coral FM.
Joey pulled himself to his feet, pulled his body back up the bank, and looked back down there. shot put across the track into the gate beside that board of bowls. Park till I ran into the woods, and I'm very good in the woods. So I was an Indian, built a fire by the creek and dried my eyes out. Here's a record body count this year.
So that was Martin Tielli from the Real Statics and Record Body Count, and I'm here with the one and only John Tutt from the Princess Cinemas, and we're talking about Canada Film Days, which is running from May to 10th at the Princess Cinemas at the Mother, at the Princess Mother, right?
It's going to be at the Princess Mother, the original. Yeah.
I like to call it the Princess, call it the Princess Mother.
You got it.
You know what? I totally forgot that the opening film is a Bruce Coburn documentary called Pacing the Cage.
It's not. It's the North American premiere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, believe it or not, yeah, it's a 70-minute doc, and we've lucked out. We've sort of had a relationship, or we know of Joel Goldberg. He came to town a while ago during Canada Film Days to present
right.
the documentary Flip Flop Fly, and that's how we sort of got to know him. And he says, "Oh yeah, I've been working on this Coburn documentary for about 3 years."
Yeah.
And he says, "You know, if it comes around, well," and it has come around, so super, super great, and. Pacing the Cage is a documentary, so that's and Joel will be there to present it Thursday night.
That's,
so the late show at 9:20 show, the later screening on Thursday night, he's going to be coming down from Toronto and introducing it, and we're really
that's
lucky to
really
have
cool.
him and to have the film for sure.
Yeah, that is great. You get a lot of first time, like you. We'll talk about this later. How you pick films? I always wanted to ask you this, but we have I have a sort of a. An aside with Bruce Coburn, years ago I was doing a story for Saturday Night, and he plays, Bruce Stephen Fearing, who you often bring to the Princess, has a guitar called the Manzer. And I didn't know what a Manzer was, and then Stephen Fearing says, made by Linda Manzer out of Toronto, and Linda Manzer makes all of Bruce Coburn's guitars. Because you'll notice, if you look at his acoustic guitar, it's a Manzer usually, and it's a little smaller than a regular, like a standard size acoustic guitar, because Bruce has some sort of crick in his arm, and he can only play a certain way. So Linda has custom designed the guitar just for him.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a little trivia fact for you.
Yeah, yeah. And when was the first time you saw Bruce Coburn?
Oh, man. That was a long time ago, John, a long time ago.
Well, I remember it was 1976 at the Hamilton Place Studio Theater.
Oh, wow.
And I remember it was kind of funny because CBC was recording it at the time. And the producer of the show would come out and he would ask us to clap politely so they could record clap. I would clap politely. And then he would come out and say, okay, clap ecstatically. And then he'd come up, clap and cheer at the same time.
Oh,
and then
right.
he went away. And so he got all this. And then Bruce came out and, you know, quietly just didn't say anything and just played.
Yeah.
You know, just finger-picked his butt off and played and played and played, and then asked someone in the corner to, you know, continue dancing, and then he left, and that was it.
And
he sat the whole show.
Yeah.
That was a Bruce Coburn concert.
He
right?
likes, he's, I mean, I've saw him at, you saw him in an intimate spot. I saw him at Center in the Square, I think. I've seen him a couple times, actually.
1980, I remember seeing him there in 1980.
Yeah.
Head-to-toe in leather.
Yeah.
He was head-to-toe leather, and...
Yeah,
he
the electronic guitar.
Yeah, he was jumping and trying to do a Pete Townsend, I remember.
So. He also had a charango with him. I remember writing about a charango, which came in handy recently because I had to interview another charango player that was just in town, Freddie Torrealba.
Ah,
so I was like, he goes, you know what a charango
what
is?
What is a charango?
It's like a cross between a ukulele and a guitar.
Oh,
something
okay.
like that. It's
all
a really interesting, small little kind of...
Yeah.
It's a very interesting instrument, and Bruce had one especially made for him.
Yeah.
Linda made it for him. Charango. It was a turquoise blue. It was blue.
Well, he's certainly open to all sorts of styles and stylings as a musician. He's
exactly.
Yeah.
Let's jump to some more music here. you're going to be doing Hardcore Logo, premiering Hardcore Logo this Saturday night, which is, I think, really, or Hardcore Logo 2.
Bruce McDonald.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is really interesting. What is Hardcore? I already know the answer to this. What is Hardcore Logo about? Hardcore Logo 2 about? I'm so used to Hardcore Logo 1.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, everything to do with rock and roll. Traveling, management, you know, egos.
Oh, yes.
You know, and all that fun stuff.
Well, if people know Hardcore Logo 1, they know that, you know, Hugh Dillon kind of, he's a cult hero. We have tribute to Hardcore Logo here, too. And he's Joe Dick, but, you know, he's not around anymore. And there's someone else that comes back kind of in its incarnation. I can't think of anybody better than Care Failure to do something like that, actually, from Die Mannequin. They're a Canadian sort of heavy goth band, I'd like to say.
Yeah.
I have played them on the show a couple times, actually. And this character is based on a band called Neon Rome, a Canadian band called Neon Rome that actually played here in the night. This is how old I am. In the 1980s at Level 21. The lead singer's name was Neil Arbick. And Bruce McDonald met Neil Arbick and was absolutely fascinated with him. Neil Arbick at the time was a hardcore, like, you know, a lot of smack and could barely finish a sentence or anything like this. Now he teaches yoga somewhere in California. A total turnaround. But Bruce is always fascinated by this rock and roll.
By the rock and roll culture.
By the rock and roll culture.
The culture of rock and roll has always had that fascination with it, right?
Yep.
And incorporating it right into his storylines.
Yep.
His characters.
Exactly. And this is a long time quest for him. So I kept thinking, I think I wasn't sure when Hardcore Logo 2 was coming out, but. And then I heard last year through a friend of mine that, yeah, it's definitely happening, and Bruce is working with a band called Die Mannequin. And I thought, oh, he's working with Care. He must be.
Mm-hmm.
They're a really interesting-sounding band. So this is a Kitchener connection.
It is a Kitchener connection because actor Paul Scholl will be at the screening. He's in the film, Hardcore mm-hmm. Logo. And Paul actually just told me a couple days ago that Bruce is coming. So Bruce McDonald will be there Saturday.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
And originally, part of the festival planning, Bruce just, you know, he couldn't make it. Fine. Okay, you can't make it to the screening. We're still going to do your film. But the rumor is, or Paul has suggested, that Bruce is going to be there on Saturday night. And there's going to be an after party Saturday night after the screening.
Yep.
It's going to be probably our most party-ish screening of the festival, for sure.
Yeah, it'll be a very film festival kind of night.
Yeah, it'll be fun. There'll be a lot of joking. There's some trickster pranks planned for the opening night. I can't talk about right now.
No, that's okay.
On Saturday. That's a Saturday screening for Hardcore Logo 2. So.
Yeah, and I kind of look at Bruce McDonald as a rock and roll. Like, he's a rock and roll hero director type guy. Interesting guy. And when he did the Tracy fragments, that was based on a series of punk poems. You know, he's always had that kind of sort of edge to him. The rock and roll cowboy boots dude.
Yeah, going back to Roadkill.
Oh, Roadkill.
And Highway 61.
Yeah.
When the drive-in still existed out in Bridgeport, there was a drive-in out in Bridgeport there. That's where the premiere of that film was, Highway 61.
Oh, my God.
He came into town and presented it at this drive-in out there, and it was a huge party.
I'm not surprised. He's a really interesting guy, and I'm really glad that you guys are doing this, because this is like this is a huge, like, Kitchener rock and roll connection with Paul Scholl, because Paul used to do bands, bring in bands to, was it Elements? What was before Elements?
Yeah, I think he sort of a promoter or something, and he would bring bands in. He's a real go-getter, right?
He's also the manager for Die Mannequin, if I'm not mistaken. He's very tight with them, too.
Yeah.
So it all connects together.
And he's got his own thing starting up with this character called Mr. Butterscotch, which if you come to the screening, you'll find out more about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's going to be some clips about Mr. Butterscotch, but...
I'm gonna try. I might have to sneak in because I have to work at the video store. But I may come in after work if I can sneak in. That would be
right
great on Saturday. We have another movie too. This is Citizen, this is Edward Boyd's Citizen Gangster. Now, this is based on a true story.
It is. That's one of our feature dramas. And most of these are documentaries. Hardcore Logo is a feature drama. Edwin Boyd, Citizen Gangster, starring Scott Speedman.
Yeah.
Set in the 50s in Toronto.
Yeah.
About a guy who didn't know if he wanted to be an actor or a gangster.
Yeah, no kidding.
And he turned out, based on a true story, turned out that the guy wanted to, went into being a gangster a little bit more and started to be a bank robber.
Yeah.
But the kitschy, campy things that he did to be a bank robber and how his get-ups and how he dressed up.
Makeup and all that groovy stuff.
His modus operandi was pretty strange. And that's really well depicted. The film is maybe one of the biggest films in the festival. It's been picked up for release this summer in Toronto, in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, and they're just calling it Citizen Gangster. In Canada, it's being released as Edwin Boyd, Citizen Gangster.
Wasn't it a favorite at TIFF?
Yes, it was. It was, I think, one of... TIFF comes up with the top 10 films of the year.
Yeah.
Top 10 Canadian films, and Edwin Boyd was one of the top 10 Canadian films. So
I remember Scott Speedman in Felicity. And I was thinking, But then I also remember him in Barney's Version, which was an amazing film.
I think people thought he was just this pretty boy when he first started, right?
No, yeah, he's in Underworld, too. You know, he's like he's really vampire fighter. He's
gotten
very,
the chops and...
Very versatile. And this is kind of cool because he becomes an infamous, almost like a romantic figure. The bank tellers kind of go, ooh... The girls are wondering what it would like to be with you.
I know. All the bad boys. Falling in love with a bad boy.
Yeah. And meanwhile, his family's going, what are you doing? You know, and he starts off, it's all about, I just want to protect my family, but this isn't working out. So he starts off solo and then he ends up, you know, it's kind of like with this gangster thing. It's very popular with Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire and all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So... And this is this is based on a true story.
Yeah,
so.
And it translates well. I love playing Canadian cinema. You know, it should be played more often than not.
Yeah.
You know, for the amount of 1 or 2% of screen time in Canada.
I know.
The chain cinemas allot Canadian films to play. And, give me a break. Lots of great movies out there.
I know. I thought that might have changed. Like, you know, rather than saying, it was a Canadian film, people just say it's a film... shot in Canada, but no.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if a film is good and it's promoted well, I think it really, you don't have to say it's Canadian. You go to see it because it's Canadian. Well, no, it'll just be another great movie. One Week?
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody really was going on and on about it being Canadian. It was just promoted. It was... well acted, good storyline, and set entirely in Canada, by the way.
But. Yeah, it was like almost like a snapshot of Canada. You know, it was really good. It was a great movie, and we have it at the store, and it rents out a lot. So.
Yeah. So the crafts people are there. The film, the cinematographers, the directors, the sound people, they're great. Because often they work on American features, so this is a real chance to. To sing the praises of Canadian filmmakers.
No kidding. No, I got it. I know, like, I've got about 10 minutes, and I'm going to play some Die Mannequin just for fun. But now that I have you sitting here in the chair, how do you pick movies? How do you know what to bring in?
Good question. You're always turning over a leaf to seeing what's there. You're talking to your distributors all the time. Throughout the year, you're basically always on. You're always programming, right, and booking. And you're also trying to, and as you get older, I always think, oh, gee, can I really stay in touch with the zeitgeist, you know, as much as I could when I, you know, opened the cinema almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But you sort of have a feel, you sort of have a feel for what's going on. That's basically how you, and also, does it deserve it? Because, I mean, culturally, I'm kind of this gatekeeper that says no to certain films and yes to other films that can go and play on the, you know, big, you know, 16-foot high screens.
Right.
And so it is, and you want your film. I think it's better to have a film play, you know, in a cinema than just sort of, oh, well, we'll just throw it out onto the, you know, internet and hope someone discovers it.
Yeah, it's much better.
So through experience, I think you develop sort of a programming... method I think that's basically it. It really does take experience to know, oh, gee, that's a dud. Or, oh, gee, well, gee, we didn't, that didn't
that
work when I booked that director in, and, or that title. So that's, you know, and demographically it's harder because I think some of our audiences, our bigger audience is actually sort of an aging audience.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever, the 40 to 60-year-olds or something, they come out in droves.
I know.
They're adventurous, movie-going, seeking people, right? And so younger audiences are still, you know, still finding these new technologies and ways to watch movies, and whether they watch a whole feature on little smaller technologies, I don't really know.
Yeah.
And whether or not they will sort of phase into sort of going out culturally,
I think there's some, it's like a collective experience when you watch a film, you know, and people like that. So
yeah.
Sitting and watching something on your, sometimes, you know, it'll pixelate, or it'll like, oh, you can only, these days, I got to tell you, there's what's called net neutrality. So you start downloading too much stuff on the internet, you're going to get charged. So a lot of people are saying, you know what, screw this. I'm going to go and see a movie. Like, why pay all this extra money when I actually go out and see something? So things are starting to turn around again.
I think so too. People are realizing that there's definitely value.
Yeah, you know,
to going out, being part of your community, sitting in a dark room and watching a movie, the magic of it coming on screen. It's
exciting.
Yeah.
It really is exciting.
It's the way to go, yeah.
Outside of Canada Film Days, are there any films that you want to talk about that are coming in the next little while?
Interesting. One of the things that actually just today I was booking it's just been available for us to book. It's an hour-long interview with Steve Jobs that was done in 1995. And which is pre-iMac,
pre-all
that stuff, iPod.
All that stuff.
Yeah, and so he talks all about being a visionary and what it takes to be a visionary and what's the digital world going to look like. And this is in 1995 he's talking. So that's going to be a fascinating film, probably in the late May. We're going to do two screenings of that, two special presentations, likely with sort of one of the high-tech organizations,
right,
or the hubs or something
like
that.
That makes sense.
Co-presenters. So that's kind of fascinating, and that'll be interesting to see, how, just in our community too, with all the, you know, high-tech startups. But the the fun thing that we open May 18th is the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, I mean, it's got, I don't know how many people are in it that
Judy
are currently
Dench?
In
Dench
Downton
in
Abbey. Maggie Smith is
in
it.
Oh, yeah.
And half the Downton Abbey cast is in it. It's a British fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
All these retiring British people go to India to look for a place to stay. And, of course, it doesn't meet their expectations and da-da-da-da-da. It's humorous. Lots of humor in it. Who's the fella in it?
Jim Broadbent?
No, Jim Wilkinson. Tom Wilkinson.
Oh, yeah.
Wilkinson. Bill Nighy.
Yep. Oh, that's a good cast.
Yeah. So Judy Dench is in
it.
Smith. Yeah, it's a great cast. So that'll be fun. May 18th, we open that. Terrence Davies, another British director, Terrence Davies, who's really known for filming, the time period he films in is just post-war England. So, and he's got a film called The Deep Blue Sea with Rachel Weisz in it. And that's sort of something that we're going to be opening in the early June 1st. I think we got that locked in to open. Maggie Gyllenhaal is in something called Hysteria. And that's a period piece. And it's, believe it or not, all about the history of the vibrator. and it's done in a tasteful way, and it's a comedy.
So
that's Hysteria is coming as well. And Sarah Pauley has a new movie with Michelle Williams in it.
Oh, that's
Michelle
a,
Williams
th-
played
that's
Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that's Take This Waltz.
Sarah
is the title.
She's done a lot of stuff. I mean, Away From Her was actually filmed around this area. She's become, you know, from being on Road to Avonlea. She's come a long way, and there's a Kitchener connection here too, because I think her husband's David Warnsby. You don't know?
Not anymore.
Okay. Oh, right, that's right. They're not together. Sorry.
Yeah, no, but there was a connection. But she's a Canadian filmmaker that, like kind of Cronenberg or even Egoyan, is it looks like, and I'm sure she's had the opportunity to go south of the border. she's staying here. I mean, Seth Rogen and Michelle Williams star in this film that's shot in Toronto. And I think, I mean, the critics are starting to say it's sort of autobiographical, that what's going on in her life right now. I don't know if it is or not, but we're excited to see more about it. Take This Waltz. I think it's, I'm sure it's taken from a Leonard Cohen.
Sounds like it.
Track.
Could, yeah.
Did, I believe he had a song titled...
Take This Waltz? Let's see if I can find it on...
I think he did.
What was I going to say? Are you finding more movies being filmed around this area? I actually did a film map.
Okay.
Over the last 40 years, 30 years of things that have been filmed in this area, a lot around Elora. Brantford seems to be the place where zombie movies can be shot.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one downtown they shot.
In Cambridge is like for period pieces. Have you seen that in the last little while?
Certainly, I know Elora Gorge has, but I think there's an awareness of the films being shot, I think. You know, there's whether or not we end up seeing them, you know, and hearing about them played in theaters, I can't really say.
Okay.
But there's just more movies. I mean, when we opened, like I say, 30 years ago, we'd the theaters would have about 300 movies would come through a year, would play.
Right.
Now there's upwards between 600 and 700. So from a programmer or a booker like myself, there's just so many more movies to pour through, because independents come to you with their own film. Hey. Can you play this?
Yeah.
I'm not going through the traditional distribution methods.
Right.
Take a look if you like it. It's played a few festivals. Do you want to play it? And a lot of them are local. You know, there's certainly a lot of skill level there. So building in this community too, with the Multicultural Cinema Club where they're sort of building a base of equipment that people can rent out.
You also work with a lot of organizations in town, which is great whenever there's a special presentation coming in, like. I know you do Rainbow Reels, you do, like, you have the, what is it, not a, it's a water...
Oh, the paddling festival.
The paddling festival, all that kind of stuff, which I think is really great.
Yeah.
I had one more question for you. No, I lost it. Oh, never mind.
We do live shows, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah. You have Sherry Ulrich coming in on May the 30th, so I think I might be doing a radio thing
Sherry
with her.
Sherry Ulrich Trio, with her. Her daughter's going to be with her, yeah.
Any other music stuff that's coming in the next little while?
Well, the other thing...
Any scoops?
Yeah, Kelly Jo Phelps is playing June 4th. He's
sort of
a Delta Blues guy. It's the second time we've presented him.
Yep, that's right.
He's from the state of Washington, out on the West Coast. He's going to be coming through. And I guess the only other thing, we do our annual Fred Eaglesmith show, and that's going to be coming in November.
Yep.
I mean, unbelievably, people are already... Like, it's on Fred's website that we dated this months ago. People are calling now for tickets.
Well, so many musicians come back to you guys. Like, you know, I'm
David Francy,
Stephen Furey, Fred Eaglesmith, Harry Manx, all these guys.
Yeah, Garnet Rogers. So there's sort of this cadre of people that we just like bringing back and everyone. And they play around the community wherever, but there's certain ones that just work well at the Original Princess. It's a good venue for intimate live shows.
It is a good venue.
Yeah.
It is a good venue. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. For Canada Film Days, we're charged about bringing in everybody, and I urge everyone to come out and see some of the films.
And meet some of the people on site, meet the directors, meet the actors, meet the, you know, researchers. There's so many different people. And say hi to John and Wendy as well. I just want to thank you so much for coming in and being my guest.
I hope to be back.
Yeah, I hope to have you back. It would be great. We're going to go out with a bang here and play some Die Mannequin on Coral FM.
Taking to the bank, we have no more. Sick boy, my. shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the doves go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning. Yes, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Take this waltz with a clamp on its jaw. I want you on a chair with a dead magazine. In the cave at the tip of the lily. In some hallway where love's never been. On our bed where the moon has been sweating. In a fire filled with footsteps and sand. Talking, they've been sentenced to death by the blues. How about who is it climb to your picture? Ah, with a garland of freshly cut teal. Take this waltz, it's been dying. There's an attic where children are playing. Well, I got to lie down with you soon. In a dream of Hungarian lanterns. In the midst of some sweet afternoon. And I'll see what you change. Your sorrow, all your sheep and your lilies of snow. Take this waltz with its all. Never forget you, you know. Take this waltz, it's yours now, it's all. that there is. It's summer, spirit of early mists and showers, Ixta, goddess of ropes and snares, Ixchel, the spider web that catches the dew of morning, Zui Kak, virgin fire, patroness of infants, Adziz, the master of gold, Kaku Pocket, who works in fire, Ixta Doom, she who spits out precious stones, Chun Chan, the dangerous one. Apuk, the destroyer. Hiroshima, 1945, August 6. 16 minutes past 8 a.m. Who really gave that order? Answer, control. The ugly American, the instrument of control. Question, if control's control is absolute, why does control need to control? Answer, control needs time. Question, is control controlled by its need to control? Answer, yes. Why does control need humans, as you call them? Wait, time, a landing. Death needs time like a junkie needs junk. And what does death need time for? The answer is so simple. Death needs time for what it kills to grow in, for our poop's sake. Death needs time for what it kills to grow in, for our poop's sweet sake, you stupid, vulgar, greedy, ugly American death sucker. Death needs time for what it kills to grow in, for our pook's sweet sake. You stupid, vulgar, greedy, ugly American death sucker. Like this. Brian Geisen had the all-purpose nuclear bedtime story. The all-purpose bedtime story, in fact. Some trillions of years ago, a sloppy, dirty giant flicked grease from his fingers. One of those gobs of grease is our universe on its way to the floor. Splat.
That was William S. Burroughs and Apuk the Destroyer from Dead City Radio. Oh, and Apuk the Destroyer and Brian Geisen's all-purpose bedtime story from... William S. Burroughs, Dead City Radio. And before that, Die Mannequin. Die Mannequin and Bad Medicine. And as John Tutt from the Princess Cinema and I were discussing, Care is, the lead singer Care is the incarnation of Joe Dick in Hardcore Logo 2, which is going to be part of the Princess Cinema Canada Film Days this Saturday at the Princess Cinema. And Paul Scholl, who's an actor and kind of tightly connected to Die Mannequin, will be there that night, so that's going to be cool. Those are lots of great films, but these six films in particular are part of Canada Film Days, and so I hope you can make it out to the Princess Cinemas. It's always lovely to have John in the studio, and I'm hoping that maybe I can get John and Wendy in here at the same time. I know they're both really busy, so I really thank him for coming in to do that. And I'm a major, because I'm such a major film freak, and because I work in a video store. And we advertise at the Princess Cinema. We're called Far Out Flicks, and we're a little independent video store on Queen Street. And there aren't, John, as John was mentioning, there aren't too many of us left.